People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio and Rodney Trudgeon here welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I have as my guest the distinguished South African flautist Liesel Stoltz in as my guest today, who has had, as you will hear, an astonishing career of endless awards and scholarships, also a doctorate. She did a postdoctorate study at the University of Cape Town. And the aim of her research then was to promote South African composers and their works for flute. And in fact, in 2012, she toured Europe with the pianist François du Toit, presenting concerts and workshops of South African flute music at various universities and concert halls. And Liesel regularly acts as external examiner at academic institutions and as adjudicator for local iStedfords and music competitions. And she's performed as a soloist and also as guest principal with all the major orchestras here in South Africa. And she is an avid chamber musician as well. So lots to discover about you. Liesel, welcome to People of Notes.
Thank you, Rodney. It's nice.
I see it says here you started studying the flute at the age of 13. Do you come from a musical background?
Not really. I mean, my parents love music and they always went to music concerts. And when we were children, they would take me and my sister to concerts. And we used to go to these concerts that were given by Eva Tamashi and Shirley Guy. I think they were called Concerts 4x2 or something like that.
Oh, yes, I remember those.
And Leo Landek, I think, also played in those concerts. So we often went to those concerts. And
that was mostly chamber music, wasn't it?
Mostly chamber music. Yeah. And they went to symphony concerts when there were still 2 symphony concerts per week. My father wasn't much of an opera lover, so we didn't go to opera that much. But yeah, I think my parents really loved music, and whether they're not musicians themselves, my mother lectured economics at Stellenbosch University and my father was into finance, they really supported us. My sister also studied music, and yeah, it's just, I was always attracted to the arts. I liked painting, I did ballet, I don't know. I think only the one part of my brain developed.
Okay, well, no shame. But how well it developed, may I say. So you chose the flute and started at 13. And was there a reason you chose the flute?
Because I went to so many of these concerts by Eva Tamashi, I just started loving the flute. I played the piano since I was 5.
Oh, okay. So that was the start,
I
really,
I started
of
with piano.
Music.
I wanted to start with flute earlier, but I was quite tiny and my arms were too short, so I couldn't
really?
I couldn't hold the flute. And so Eva actually suggested I should start with piccolo, and I really didn't like the piccolo back then. Mm-hmm. So I decided to wait, rather continue with piano, and I also sang in many choirs and so on. So yeah, I don't know really why specifically the flute. I just think it's because I saw her so many times, and she
was a bit of an institution, wasn't she, Eva Tamashi? She really influenced a lot of flute players, I think.
Yeah, I think people don't realize how amazing she was, because many flautists in South Africa who are good flautists were students of hers. Mm-hmm. And she had a wonderful way of teaching that's not, you know, some teachers I find can be very competitive and their students need to, you know, win every award and so on. As you know, when I went to her and said, I want to do this in this competition, so she wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Or I would
really?
Be at a competition and tell her, oh, I'm in the final round. And she would say, of what, my dear? You know, so she wasn't. And that was actually wonderful because, you know, and also the repertoire you did with her, she had all these Hungarian pieces.
She was Hungarian, wasn't
yes,
she?
Yes. Yeah. And it wasn't your normal, like, Trinity syllabus or Royal School. Not that there's anything wrong with these syllabuses, but she did a whole lot of other things that I think was interesting.
Which would have given you, are you saying, which would have given you a more eclectic view of the flute and its repertoire?
Obviously, she had her background, and she drew from that. And a big inspiration for her was Jean-Pierre Rampal. Uh-huh. So there was a very strong French background, I think. And she taught from the French method books also. So I think all of us have a little bit of that.
I'm just thinking, when you say the French method, the French method is the most popular with flutes and flautists, isn't it? What other style of flute learning, studying would you study?
Well, when I'm talking about French methods, I mean, the most famous one is the Tafana-Langobert method, Complet de la Flûte Traversière.
Yes.
And it's been used all over the world. Wherever I go, I find people use this book still. And it's, I mean, obviously, and then there's Altes and many other methods. But then there are, you know, British methods. I know Trevor Wire, for instance, wrote many technique books, and there are many. But I mean, I think everything comes back to the French, because even the English are studied in France. It's interesting.
It is. And you also did study in France, didn't you? You studied in France and Italy.
Yeah, I was lucky, because I started studying BMAS at Stellenbosch University, and then a Japanese flutist called Shiganori Kudo, he visited Stellenbosch and he gave master classes, and he was living in France at the time, and he was a star student of Jean-Pierre Rampal. So he gave master classes, and after that he invited me to come and study with him in France, and he organized a scholarship. I got some other scholarships as well.
You have a list of scholarships.
To help me, because, I mean, education in France wasn't really that expensive. It's mostly the cost of living and all of that that's really expensive. But Eva told my parents, you know, I won't get a chance like this again, and I need to go. So
off you went.
Yeah.
Lisa, let's have a music break. And your first piece of music is a song by Richard Strauss, Morgan, which is one of his very famous songs. But I see this is arranged for soprano, piano, and violin, which I have to say I haven't heard, so I'm looking forward to hearing it. Why did you choose this?
Well, I am a fan of smaller kind of intimate ensemble playing. I don't know. It's just something that always, when I think of all the music that I really like, it's more sort of a smaller combination. I find these songs very intimate, and the atmosphere that's created with only three instruments, the voice is also an instrument, I think it's quite magical. And I'm currently having singing lessons with Virginia Davids.
Really? Gosh.
Yeah. And
there's no end to your musical enthusiasm.
No, I find it very interesting, and it's really opened my eyes to all the repertoire that there is for voice, which we don't have. And the whole thing about the text that gives meaning to the music is, and this text is so beautiful of the song. I don't know if I can read it.
Just read an opening line.
Just the opening is like, "And tomorrow the sun will shine again, and on the way that I will go, she will again unite us, the happy ones."
Thank you.
Well, that was interesting. It's the first time I've heard that arrangement of the song Morgan by Richard Strauss, which I've often heard with a full orchestra, but there just for soprano, piano, and violin. And it was the first choice of my guest, Liesl Stoltz, the flautist. Who were the artists there, Liesl?
So this was performed by, I hope I pronounce this correctly, Sabine de Vey, Mathieu Pordoy, and Ville de Franc.
Ah, we're talking about pronouncing it correctly. You said you studied in France. Did you manage to pick up French?
Yeah, no, I learned French, and I mean, it was quite a difficult thing to do, but I was quite fluent when I, you know, at the end of my time there. But it's been difficult, you know, in South Africa to keep it up because I don't have anyone to talk to.
No French friends. I wanted to ask you, Shigenori Kudo, the man you invited you to study with, he, and you said he was a pupil of Jean-Pierre Rampal. And in fact, they've made a few recordings together, which you probably know of various things. Were you ever a fan of Jean-Pierre Rampal? And I'm sure you're going to say yes, because after all, he was one of the greats. But did he influence you?
I was a fan. I think, you know, in his heyday, it was like him and James Galway.
Yes.
That we knew of in South Africa. And I remember, Eva used to make me these little tapes of Jean-Pierre Rampal. And I also had masterclasses with him in France.
Well, that must have been quite a thing.
Yeah, he was quite old already. I remember he was sitting in the masterclass, and I think he's the repertoire that he's sort of famous for is more classical concertos or earlier concertos, and I think his sound is perfect for that repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe today, I think there are many more flautists out there today.
Very much so. You mentioned James Galway, Liesl, and I mean, they're two very different musicians and two very different sounds, aren't they? Because James Galway has quite a kind of glamorous, loud,
yeah,
which worked when he was principal of the Berlin Philharmonic and all the solo stuff he's done, including modern stuff. Do you agree?
I must say that they are very different. I remember some of the concertos that I can remember that James Galway sort of got famous for, the Rodrigo concerto that he recorded, and then he did a recording of this Cacciatorean violin concerto, and, you know,
to do
that on the flute, I think it's a little bit crazy because you can never sound like a violin. But I personally, I mean, I have a lot of respect for James Galway, and he certainly paved the way for many flautists, but I'm more a fan of the French, like Jean-Pierre Rampal, and people that came after him, like Emmanuel Pau. And
I was just going to ask you about Emmanuel Pau, because I was in Berlin and I was lucky enough to get him for an interview for People of Note. And I've always liked his sound when he was in the orchestra, but also when he started doing solo stuff, and even now. And I know what you mean. He's more of a French sound than James Galway was.
Yeah, I think if I have to talk about the sound, James Galway is a very specific sound. If you put on the radio and a recording is playing of him, you instantly know it's him, because it's the same kind of vibrato that's so special, and it's his vibrato. You know it's James Galway, and it's interesting because his one student, Rafael Trevisani, plays with very much the same kind of sound.
Rafael, I think, even bought one of Galway's flutes because he came to South Africa with that trio that played with that Piet Koornhof.
I
spoke to him, and he said that he'd bought one of Galway's flutes. And so that's why maybe he sounded like that.
Yeah, but I think it's also a way of producing the vibrato. I think the French, maybe it's also to do with the repertoire, because French music asks for, if you think of Debussy, and it asks for a flexible tone and not always the same constant vibrato from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to adapt your vibrato, and I think the French are very good at doing this.
I agree. And you, as you rightly say, you hear it. You can immediately pick up that it's not Jean-Pierre Rampal and probably James Galway when you listen on the radio. But talking of Debussy, a fairly famous sonata he wrote for flute, viola, and harp. is what we're going to hear next. And on this, we'll hear you playing the flute along with Jacqueline Kerrod and Jill King at a concert at the Backstall for the Cape Town Concert Series. And it is a live recording. Have you included it because it's something special?
Yeah, Debussy is one of my favorite composers. I really love Debussy. And because he's the way he uses instruments to get a specific effect, it's like there's a very specific use for every instrument. It's not just there's a meaning with everything he does. And the colors are just amazing. And you can really feel, like they say, this piece is a lot like his pieces like La Mer. You can really feel those waves and what he's trying to bring out.
That impressionist world as
well. And also Jacqueline Kerrod is probably one of the best musicians I've ever played with in my entire life.
Oh, gosh, that's a compliment.
She's a South African harpist who lives in America, and I'm very sad that she's not in South Africa because it was a very special trio that for me.
Well, let's listen to some Debussy. Part of the Sonata for Flute, Viola and Harp by Claude Debussy. And my guest, Liesl Stoltz, was the flautist there, Jacqueline Kerrod Harp and Jill King Viola. And that was recorded at the Baxter Concert Hall during the Cape Town Concert Series. And as I say, my guest, Liesl Stoltz. And Liesl, one of the many reasons I've invited you here is to talk about your new project, which I think is this Woodwind Festival. It's the first Woodwind Festival, apparently, and it's happening from the 8th to the 11th of April this year. So just tell me how that came into being and why you felt there should be a Woodwind Festival.
Well, I've been teaching at UCT for more than 20 years now, and we've got quite a big woodwind department, and we have lots of flute students and bassoon, clarinet, oboe, probably the most flutes.
Oh, really? Is there
I don't
a good
know why
flute turnout?
Always the most flutes, and there's, so little work for all of them. But anyway, so I always felt that there are lots of opportunities for string players and even singers and pianists, and it's great, and I'm happy about that, but there are not enough possibilities for wind players. And it's discouraging for them because they can't build up a a CV or anything, they can't get better because the only way to improve is to have competition.
And I see this features a competition as well, the first Cape Town National Woodwind Competition with masterclasses, performances, all those sort of things. So this is an opportunity, as you say.
Yeah, so it's a festival because my idea was that it shouldn't only be a competition because then, you know, if you're a candidate and you maybe fall out in the first round, then you have to go home and you don't learn anything.
That is true.
I wanted to attract people just to enjoy woodwind playing and to actually see what there is, because woodwinds are also not programmed that much. If you look at festival programs, it's often string quartets or strings with singers, and I understand that, but I feel the public needs to be made aware of the beautiful repertoire that there is for wind players. And so we have a few concerts, not a lot, because we only have, you know, our funding is limited. So it's quite a small festival to start off with, and hopefully it will go well, so that we will probably do this every second year.
Where is the festival being held?
So it's the Rainbow Exchange is a non-profit company that I'm on the board of, and we're doing it in collaboration with University of Cape Town. The university is providing, they provide all the venues and also help with administration and all the logistical things. So the concerts will be in the Baxter Theatre Centre in the evenings of that, between the 8th and the 11th of April.
And regarding repertoire?
So we have an opening concert on the 8th of April where we will play, works for it's just various combinations of wind instruments, and it mainly features the faculty of UCT Woodwind Department, but also Dan Rijstrijdom and John Ruchas, who will be on our panel for a competition. And then also the pianists François de Toey and Estia Krier will be accompanying the woodwind players. And the woodwinds are myself, Brandon Phillips, bassoon, Annelies de Villiers, clarinet, Cara Pierce, and Paul Richard, saxophone.
Gosh, you've got some big names there, Liesel. And I see also that it says young musicians aged 14 to 30. So the 14, obviously, they're going to be people pre-university, and 30 when they're just out of university.
So we have two categories for our competition. We have a junior category, which is mainly aimed at high school scholars. I didn't put an age there because, you know, they can be the various ages, but as long as they're in high school.
Right.
And then we have a tertiary category that the age limit is 28, which is for any university student.
Okay. Gosh, it's quite an adventurous thing to do, I was going to say. And hopefully then you will want it to happen every year.
Every second year.
So you must watch out for that, actually. The first Woodwind Festival from the 8th to the 11th of April at the Baxter. And maybe later you can give us some details of how people can find out. Is there a website?
Yes.
And what is that?
So they can find information on the College of Music's, South African College of Music website. But the main information is on our website, the Rainbow Exchange. So it's www.the-rainbow-exchange. Oh,
yes. And those things are important, those dashes and dots.
Yeah, but if they just type into Google, you know, the Rainbow Exchange, they'll find our website.
They'll get it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a little music break because I want to ask you more. You've mentioned a few times the Rainbow Exchange, and I just want to find what's more about what that actually is. But you've chosen some Rachmaninoff, and a great favorite, I think, of many people. They all, of the Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini, everyone sits waiting for variation number 18. And have you chosen it just for love?
Well, I've chosen it because I never get to play Rachmaninoff, as a flautist. It's not permanent in
orchestra.
Unless
you play in one of his symphonies.
Yes. But since I'm not permanent in orchestra, I really get the opportunity to play this.
Oh.
And I have to say that I'm not always a Rachmaninoff fan because I feel like it's played a bit too much, and then it loses some of the magic in it. But this specific work is very beautiful, and yes, it is like he's got his heart on his sleeve and just spilling it all out, and I think it's just fantastic. It's actually also quite simple and beautiful.
Beautiful, Rachmaninoff, indeed. That's variation number 18 from the Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini by Rachmaninoff. Another choice of my guest here in the studio, the People of Note studio, the distinguished South African flautist Liesel Stoltz. You've mentioned a couple of times the Rainbow Exchange non-profit organization founded just before COVID. Now, just tell me what this is. What is it all about?
So, in 2020, just before COVID, a friend of mine, Valentina Forster, she's a violinist, we were talking about we want to organize concerts in other places. So it's not Cape Town and not in a big concert hall. And she had many students, and I also had quite a few students, and we want to, you know, involve them in concerts, and we want to do some of it in the northern suburbs, and in elsewhere, you know, further away from the city center. And I was thinking about this, and I mean, we do this anyway, right? I've always been doing this, but we don't have any money.
And the old story. Yeah.
And the only way to apply for funding is to have an organization.
As a non-profit organization.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's not the reason why we wanted to do these concerts, and I've always done concerts also at retirement villages and schools. I've always done this throughout my career, but I felt like we needed some help. So I was looking into it, and I suggested we form a non-profit organization. So I went to see my accountant, who suggested we do a non-profit company. Which is actually also a non-profit organization. It's sort of under the same it's a different legal entity, but it basically does the same thing. A non-profit organization is a little bit more broad, like a food, you know, like a soup kitchen or... not always, but they don't make profit.
It's an interesting comparison, a soup kitchen, yes.
They don't make profit. We also don't make profit, but we can, you know, sell tickets and use that income to generate further opportunities and so on. So we then registered this company under the Companies Act, and we got funding mainly from the Rupert Foundation for projects that we're project specific. So we're not an organization that runs from day to day with, we decide on specific projects and then we get funding for them, because all of us are also busy with other, you know, I'm a musician, I teach at UCT, I have 1,000 other things that I do. Yeah, we've done a lot of projects. Okay, so then COVID hit and we just started and we couldn't do anything. And I was very lucky because a professor from UCT approached me and they had done research in the Southern Cape. She had a doctorate student who did research about the possibilities in these fishing communities. And, you know, it was all about scenarios, different scenarios. But the problem for them was they couldn't translate their research so that people can understand it in different communities. So they wanted to kind of use music and text and so on to translate their dissertation or thesis into something that's more understandable. So we basically took their research and... that was our first project, getting in musicians. I had a scriptwriter. I commissioned a composer to write songs with text. And this was funded by the National Research Foundation. And it kept us busy for 2 years.
Wow, good heavens.
We did a whole...
Would you say it was a success?
It was fantastic. I mean, we did a... I really poured my heart out in that. It was at the right time because I couldn't do anything in COVID.
Yes, because of the COVID, yeah.
So it's always difficult to say whether research is successful. If you do, this was like a feedback project to show the community that this is what we've done with your data, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it takes a long time for change, but this is also one of the aims of our organization, is to use music as a tool, not only, you know, as beautiful music, go and listen, and it can be a vehicle for communication.
Especially if there is a libretto, if there are words.
Yes, if there are words, but even if there aren't words, just to, if you involve a community, and in a clever way, you can strengthen relationships. But obviously, it asks for a different type of music sometimes. You know, so I had for this project, Paul Hamner composed all our music, which was great because he has a very South African feel, his music.
Definitely.
And the text that he put in the for the songs were fantastic. And... I think it worked. Successful.
I see, Lisa, you've chosen some music by Paul Hamner with Robert Pickup, the clarinetist. Tell me about this, because now that you've mentioned Paul Hamner, it'll be good to listen to some of his music.
So Paul and Robert are friends of mine. I've known Paul since I did my postdoc at UCT, because he commissioned a work for my recording from him. And he wrote the most beautiful piece called Sarah Bond for the Days of a Sundog for me. But I recently played in the Mzansi Orchestra together with Robert Pickup, and the first time that I heard him play. And it was very inspiring, and he's a fantastic player. And he's also a very good friend of Paul. And they made this CD. I can't remember what the title is now, but this is a track from the CD that they recorded together, and I think it's just the most beautiful piece of music. I think it's a mixture between jazz and classical. St. Gallen is obviously a town in Switzerland, So this is based on
St. Gallen in Autumn.
In Autumn.
Thank you.
music by Paul Hanmer there, PC Road called St. Gallen in Autumn, Paul Hanmer and Robert Pickup there, and another choice of Liesel Stoltz, my guest, the flautist, the distinguished flautist, Liesel. You know what I was thinking when you spoke about your love of intimacy in music, chamber music and so on, but you have played in the big orchestras in this country many times, as you said with the Mzansi, and also with the, all the major orchestras as principal or guest flute. Do you not enjoy that?
No, straight out. I do, of course. I've played a lot for JPO, especially not last year, but the year before. I was flying up and down constantly. It's just not practical for me because, you know, I live in Cape Town.
And you're very busy here with your students.
My students, they're important to me. I've never wanted to admit that... teaching is important to me because I feel like I'm a performer. Firstly, I love playing my instrument. I could do it all day long. But I do feel there's something about teaching. Maybe it's because I come out of a family of, you know, my mother was a lecturer, my father was a lecturer. Yes. My sister is at a university. Maybe it's just I can't escape it.
So. Yes. But it's interesting because so many, well, not so many, but a lot of musicians, professional musicians, aren't natural teachers. It's something special that you have to have, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I like helping people.
There's a definite philanthropic side coming out here with your love of people, helping people. Intimacy with musicians.
Feel, you know, people always feel that they have to have the best students and then they feel they've, you know, they're successful when their students win everything. And that's important. But I feel if I can help people get, you know, make some kind of improvement, then it's great. And, you know, every student, I'm now going off the topic, but every student that I have is different. I have really nice students at UCT, and they are interesting. And I feel it keeps me kind of young as well because I have to keep up with what's going on in the world with flute playing. You know, because it's evolving so fast, and the new repertoire every time we constantly watch what's prescribed for international competitions and so on, that we don't, you know, fall behind. And but the orchestra thing is I love playing symphonies, for instance.
And there are some lovely flute parts in symphonies, also some very difficult ones. The moment of the last moment of the Eroica, for example.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's part of my personality. I don't like to be boxed in. Mm-hmm. Even though it's my kind of career isn't easy because I have to motivate myself in all these different areas. Whereas if you had one employer, it might have been easier.
Yes.
But
maybe boring, but easier.
But yeah, I think this is just how I am. I like doing a variety of things. Sometimes chamber music, sometimes orchestra. I love playing solo. Also,
syrinx. I bet you play. We were talking about Debussy earlier, and I nearly asked you because that's such a famous piece for solo flute, and so typical of Debussy.
Yeah, I know. Syrinx is beautiful piece, and the. Yeah.
There was one flute concerto I read somewhere that you said was very difficult. Was that one by Ebert? No?
I mean, I think the Ebert concerto is probably one of the best concertos there is for flute, and it's technically quite demanding. But, you know, something like the Rodrigo concerto that's now I played it with TPO a couple of years ago. That was technically much harder, I think, for me than the Ebert. But they're different because Ebert requires long breath, breath control and different, sound textures
and
so on.
It is a bit odd here and there, may I say.
Yeah.
We're approaching the end of the program, but before, you said you've got all these flute students and the flute has been constantly very popular. But where do they all go? Because there's only a limited amount of orchestras or chamber groups and all that.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. I always ask myself, how am I going to motivate them? Because some of them are really talented. And I also don't know if it's always the you know, if it's always the best thing to go overseas, because even in Europe, musicians are struggling to find work. I have a previous student of mine in Germany who's in an orchestra there, and, you know, telling me of, you know, orchestra auditions, and then there are 200 flutists who come for the second audition. Okay. And it's just, and some of them do this for years, and it's kind of disheartening. I kind of feel strongly that we need to make more opportunities in South Africa. And this is why I'm doing this Woodwind Festival, because we have local people with a lot of talent, and they need more opportunities to make them even better.
Yeah, that's true. But, and that's why that Woodwind Festival is such a good idea.
Yeah.
So congratulations for that. Just tell me about your trio, the Trio du Cap Classique, which I see you formed in 2018.
Oh, so that was with François de Toué and David Pignoir, I think. Yeah, yeah.
That must be fun for you.
It was. I mean, both those musicians are fantastic musicians, and we had a lot of fun as well. But unfortunately, David moved back to France, so we cannot function as a trio anymore. So, yeah.
So you're looking for a fine cellist.
Well, I've done work with other cellists here, also quite good. I played last year with Eddie McLean, and also with Rosamund Ender. So, yeah, I'll probably continue the group.
Yes, to satisfy your chamber music, your love of chamber music. We sort of have to end, but Liesl, just before that, remind me this Woodwind Festival, which is, I can tell, very important to you, from the 8th to the 11th of April at the Baxter. How do people enter, or when is the closing date? Or just give us some technical details, admin details about that.
So the due date for the competition is on the 21st of February. We extended it a little bit just to accommodate the universities that start so late. So they have to send in an audition recording, and they can find all the information on our website. So, you know, I'm just saying again, there's a junior category for scholars and a senior category for tertiary, for university students. And we really would really ask teachers to enter their students, even if they feel maybe they're not completely ready, because the whole point of the competition is to help with...
Yes, and give them a chance.
Yes.
So how do they enter? What address? Where do they find out information?
So the address is www.the-rainbow-exchange.co.za, and on there they can go to events, under which they will find the Cape Town Woodwind Festival. And there are several places you can click. The one is for the competition. Then there's information about concerts. And then there's information about masterclasses. And if you're still unsure about something, you can always email us. The email address is also on the website.
Well, there you are. That's information to remember. And we have to end there, Liesl, after sharing those things with us. And you're going to end with something that's a great favorite of mine, actually, the slow movement, the second movement of the Piano Concerto No. 23 by Mozart. Are you playing this as well because of the sheer beauty of the piece?
So Mozart is another favorite composer. I don't know which one is better, Debussy or Mozart, but I love Mozart. And I love this pianist, Helen Grimaud. Mm-hmm. And I find the second movement of this concerto is an absolute favorite of mine. If I'm on my deathbed one day, someone can play it for me. it's simple, and it's just really sublime.
There you are. So we'll end then with that adagio from the Piano Concerto No. 23 by Mozart, played by Helene Grimaud. And my guest on People of Note this week was Liesl Stoltz, the distinguished South African flautist. Thank you, Liesl.
Thank you, Rodney.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
This is FMR.
Of Love needs you to nourish our children.
When I grow up, I want to be the best that I can be in every way. Eating food that's good for me means that I can learn and play.
Gifting a child healthy meals helps realize their dreams.
A big thank you is what we say.
Visit ladlesoflove.org.za and together let's feed the future.